Opportunities to commit fraud are common for all of us, but not everyone does it. What keeps some people honest and turns others into criminals? It's a fine line, one explored by Kelly Richmond Pope in this episode of the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Kelly is a certified public accountant, a holder of the CGMA designation, and a university professor who has produced a Netflix-worthy documentary film. I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with the J of A, and I asked Kelly about that film, others that are in the works, and why some fraudsters are coming to her to tell the stories of their crimes. Coming up is our conversation, but first, here's a word from our sponsor.
Interested in increasing your firm's profitability? Check out the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Services Program and learn how to package, price, and deliver more value to your clients. Discover how at sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Kelly Richmond Pope is joining us on the podcast today. Kelly, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So in a presentation recently, you're now saying you're the go-to person for white-collar criminals to contact you when they get out of prison?
Years ago that happened. Well, no. Okay, so years ago, I used to stalk them, strategically stalk them. And lately, people have heard about me because I'm willing to hear their stories. And I think the difference is a lot of times when people commit a crime, we sort of put them in this category and we're like, that's them. And I sort of say we all have the propensity to do what that person did. So let's talk. Let's hear how similar we are as opposed to looking at how different we are. So I think they realize that I'm willing to hear their story. And I can empathize, not to say that I would make the same choice, but I can empathize with the dilemma because all of us are faced with dilemmas. Now, we don't always respond the same way to them, but we're faced with dilemmas. And so these guys have just made a different choice.
In the example, if I'm pronouncing her name incorrectly, let me know, Diane Catani.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about that first example of a corporate American Express accidentally getting a charge for a personal trip. That seems pretty reasonable.
It's very reasonable, and it happens all the time. I tell you, if we anonymously surveyed people and said, have you ever picked up your wrong card and charged a personal lunch or charged a handbag or a pair of shoes and you picked up the wrong card, people, it happens. So it's not uncommon. Now, what you do about it is where we vary, but it's not uncommon for people to make a mistake. I like that story because it's so relatable and it's a classic expense reimbursement start. Like it's the start of a problem, but we all have seen it. I mean, I'm sure someone listening to this has done that before.
Exactly. So a phrase I've heard a few times, trust is not an internal control, to me seems worth exploring a little more. What comes to mind when you hear that?
I think trust is not an internal control is now a very important cliche, because when we trust people, we release all of our preconceived notions about things. So we connect. So you and I connect because of Durham. And so there's things, once we start feeling comfortable, there are things that we may not do that we would otherwise do if we didn't know each other. And so it happens. And I think especially in our environment now, we work so closely together. We travel together. We have breakfasts, dinners. We're in constant communication because of our phones. And so our relationships are so intertwined that it makes it hard to question people. And we trust a lot of people because we're so close to them. But we have to remember that is not an internal control. We all can rationalize why it's okay to speed, why it's okay to use personal time to check Facebook or Snapchat or make copies for your kids' dance recital for family. Like we all can rationalize why that's okay. But internal controls are there to protect us all, and we have to remember that.
Yeah, that's true. I think a lot of people could think about, you know, think of your work staff and then say, who could commit fraud? And most people would be like, none of them. No way. I totally know them. I trust them. It's just, that's how we are.
It is how we are. But I think we have to we have to ask a different question. And we have to ask a question where a person has to make a decision and not a character, a trait call. Like, you know, when you say, am I a good person? Neil, you're a good person, right? You're going to say that.
Of course.
But if I said, Neil, if you were running late, would you speed? Are you still a good person?
Absolutely, on both fronts. I would say yes to both.
But, Neil, if you're speeding, you could kill somebody. You could really hurt somebody. You could harm somebody. So, you know, we're not asking the right question. And so I think we have to give people scenarios where they have to think through decisions. So then it doesn't feel like a personal attack when you're asking, are you good or are you bad? But ask people to reason through situations.
So a quick aside, Kelly mentioned our connection with Durham. I think it's pretty cool that she went to high school about a mile from the AICPA office.
Absolutely. Very close. I mean, you could actually run there. It's very close.
So very few CPAs have the line in their bio that you have. Award-winning documentary filmmaker. How did that even come about? How did that idea come about to make films about fraud?
Okay. So here's how it started. So I did a film fellowship program with an organization here in Chicago called Cartemquin Films. And Cartemquin had a fellowship program called Diverse Voices in Docs. And I applied, and I was the only accounting professor in the program, not surprising. But numbers tell stories. They do. I mean, a financial statement is a story. That's all it is. It's a combination of tons of stories and tons of decisions. And so getting teamed up with people that could shoot and edit and do graphic design and sound editing, I mean, all of that really just made numbers tell even a more powerful story. So it's not that odd when you think about it. I mean, think about the most popular TV shows or movies of the past 3 years. They have all had a financial twist to it. A lot of them. Okay, so Ozarks on Netflix. It's about money laundering. Good Girls on NBC. It's about money laundering. Claws on TNT. It's about money laundering. Then you just have the classic ones like the Bernard Madoff HBO series. But we are intrigued by crime. Not, I think years ago we were intrigued by murder, but now we're intrigued by financial crimes. We are intrigued by it. And so I think more accountants should be filmmakers because they're the ones that can explain the numbers.
How do you get the interviewing skills or the equipment? How do you go about starting on that front with video and such?
You beg a lot of people. The good and the bad about video and equipment, it's expensive, but it's so powerful. So if you have a network of people that you can rely on, you can really create some powerful content. I operate nothing. So I I don't know how to shoot anything. I can barely take a picture on my iPhone. I can do it in portrait mode. But I know some amazing people that know how to. And I've been fortunate enough to have a crazy idea and have enough crazy people around me that help bring an idea to the big screen.
How many films have you done?
So my first film was an educational documentary called Crossing the Line, Ordinary People Committing Extraordinary Crimes. I did that about 8 years ago, and then All the Queen's Horses was the second. And then I just wrapped up a short film called When We Pray, which is an experience. So it has a beginning and a middle, but you have to solve the ending.
And the first one you mentioned, that's the one that includes the woman we mentioned earlier,
yes.
Diane Catani.
Yeah, so Diane is included in Crossing the Line, and her story, along with three other stories, is in that documentary.
I'm going to come back to All the Queen's Horses, but When We Pray, is that's about fraud?
Yes, When We Pray. Pray spelled P-R-E-Y.
Got it.
And it's about this church that is experiencing some financial hardship. And the goal is the viewer has to solve the case. So you're dropped into this situation and you meet some key players. and you watch this 15-minute short film, and then you become the investigator. So you're given all these documents, and you have to figure out the perpetrator. You have to figure out all the internal control weaknesses in the organization, and then you have to figure out the fraud schemes. And so there's three separate episodes, and at the end of each episode, you hear from the real victims.
That's great. And you're saying that's out and available right now?
It will be out and available in the fall.
So it's like an escape room for fraud?
It's like an escape room in a box, yeah. But it's like a hunt, because I think you're learning. I think learning should be fun. And so you're learning about forensic accounting. You're learning about fraud investigation. You're learning about professional skepticism. You're learning about trust. You're learning about bias, all while you're sort of on this hunt for how many red flags can you find. So the film is called When We Pray. The name of the game and the experience is called Red Flag Mania.
Okay. Good preview of an upcoming Kelly Richmond Pope film. That's excellent. So I'm going back to All the Queen's Horses. First of all, that I love that title. How did you come up with the name for that?
So when I started this project, my kids were young, and I had a 3-year-old at the time, and I was in that nursery school mode of singing nursery rhymes, and I remember singing Humpty Dumpty. I don't know why. And when I got to the line, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty back together again, I started researching what the origin of the song was about. And so, and there's a lot of different views on what it's about, but ultimately the one that I settled on was it was about trying to rebuild and put something back together again. And it was, one article said that it was a wall that they were trying to put back together. Another said it was a cannon that collapsed that they were trying to put together again. But long story short is this idea of putting something back together. Can Dixon be put back together? Rita being the queen, the collapse being the town. So I thought, all the queen's horses. And it's always good to have an A at the beginning of your movie title.
Does that help with Netflix finding? I don't know.
It helps. Yeah, because you're always the top. You're first. You're A. All the queen's horses. It's not A, it's all. So it's actually a word. So it helps.
Good thinking. So let's go back, and I should have asked this earlier or set the question up better. All the Queen's Horses, available on Netflix and other places, is about a $54 million 20-year fraud by Rita Crundwell in Dixon, Illinois. And the horse part of it is that Rita herself is like a world champion quarter horse what?
Quarter horse breeder. She's a world champion quarter horse breeder. So she bred and showed horses. And so she was well known. And the popularity and success of the film really is because of her. I mean, her horses were auctioned to China, Australia, New Zealand. And so wherever the demand for those horses were is where the demand for the film went. So it's her popularity really helped the film grow.
So I guess, you know, you've said in a recent presentation, in this case, the CFO conference in Chicago, we normally don't talk about the events, but I'll go ahead and make it specific, that you didn't interview her prom date, but do you talk to some of those quarter horse people who she interacted with?
So to answer your question, no, and I'll tell you why. The documentary is about how the fraud happened, how it wasn't discovered. The quarter horse community was a very close-knit community that no one wanted to talk. And I think the joys and the problems of documentary filmmaking is you can only tell a story people are willing to share with you. And so as much as I might want to talk to Rita's prom date or the quarter horse people or the judges or the vets, if they're not willing to talk to you, the last thing you want to do is start talking to people that are giving you just sort of gossip and hearsay. You don't want that. So those people aren't in the film. That's why the focus is really the fraud and the likelihood that if it's happening in Dixon, it's probably happening where you work or where you live.
Right. And that's one of your points, that this is a thing that could happen anywhere. And it truly does. I mean, you have a presentation. It shows a map of the world and and the dollar signs in all these locations. Why is this fraud so widespread and not seen by more people?
I think fraud is so widespread because we have access. And I think companies are run by people, and people, as beautiful as we are, have flaws. And we have access, and we have pressure and opportunity. So when you think about something like the fraud triangle, and so we talk about this in my graduate forensic accounting class, opportunity, pressure, and rationalization. Opportunity is the only thing we can really control. And so those are the holes that we can close, is the opportunity for employees. There's a lot of opportunity out there. I mean, everybody probably has a corporate card. Everyone can sort of fudge a little on their taxi cab or their, maybe not Uber anymore. But before, if your taxi cab driver gives you a blank seat receipt, everyone can add $2 or $3 to it. Who's to say that you can't? It's whatever you say. So I think because of just life's pressure and just our opportunity and access, we can all do it. And when you think that you can't, that's when it's dangerous. We all can do it.
That's a good point. Fraud triangle, that phrase. Tell me more about what that is.
So it's a system, if you will, of how we can analyze fraud cases. And so pressure, opportunity, and rationalization are the three points of the triangle. And what I like to spend a lot of my time on is the rationalization component, because that's where the interesting stories are, and that's where we vary. So when we look at these fraud cases, we're intrigued by the way people rationalize through various decisions. We all have pressure. And so ask anyone on the street what your pressure is. We have one. And we probably can think of incentives, but it's the rationalization piece that is where we vary. And so I love to talk to people and understand, why did you think that would be okay? And sort of do some self-reflection about, if I were placed in that same situation, what would I do? And so I think the fraud triangle is a powerful tool. It's simplistic, so it helps us just break things down, break complex things down into these three components. And it works for almost every case.
Aaron Beam, I don't know if you know that name, but he's the former CFO of HealthSouth.
Sure.
Have you ever
talked
to him?
Oh, sure. I've interviewed Aaron. He's in Crossing the Line. He's in the documentary, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, he's been a podcast guest of mine. I was very honored to be able to talk to him. He told the story about how it kind of became addicting when he had this set of ties that he admired from the Wall Street
Hermes
bankers.
Ties.
Exactly. So $30,000 in Hermes ties over the years. So the fact that you've already known him, maybe we don't need to dwell on it more. But I think that's one of the things, is that people, once it's successful, they're like, oh, they get kind of addicted to the lifestyle.
I think so. I think as people make more money, their context changes. I think when we read about these stories, their behaviors sometimes are so outlandish because to the common person walking around, the context is so off.
What are the red flags that people should look for in being able to mitigate or eliminate fraud, or at least to spot it and question it?
I think that we'll start simply. If trust is forcing you not to follow your own policies, be careful. Because I think that when we start relaxing some of the things that we have set up to protect ourselves, then you be careful. It's almost like, remember when, we're sort of dating ourselves now, but you remember when the automatic seat belts would come over on your body in the car? And so you didn't have to put your seatbelt on anymore. And so you just sort of, you didn't even think about it anymore because it was there to protect you. And so when it wasn't there, you almost thought, should I put it on? Should I not? You know, you had to really think about, but it was there to protect you. And I think that once you start feeling comfortable that something is there all the time, you forget that you need it. And so I think when you start not allowing yourself to follow your policies, that's a problem. And you have to catch yourself when you're doing that. you have to also catch yourself in a lot of just various judgment biases that we all fall victim to. For example, we tend to gather information to support the view that we want, or we tend to look for information that we want to support whatever answer. And when you start doing that, you just have to be careful, and that can lead you to fraud. If you have created an environment where people don't feel comfortable talking to you anymore, that's a problem, and you know it. You know how people perceive you, and I don't think that it's not that we don't know it. We know if people think you're a bully. We know if people think you're friendly. We know if people think you're fair. And so you have to sort of self-check and understand the environment that you've created and who are the people around you that help you self-check. And so I know those aren't any specifics, but it really depends on the industry that you're in. If you have a person that you trust, which we all do, and that one person knows everything about you, knows your passwords, knows your bank account number, has access to your checking account, debit card, credit card, and you aren't doing any due diligence around that, be careful.
That's a good lesson. Any recent crazy fraud cases that you've heard about recently that kind of pique your interest as a filmmaker?
Oh my God. Where to start? Let's start with the college admission scandal. For sure that. I mean, that's just wild, wild, wild. Not that we don't expect scandals to happen and fraud to happen, but the extent to what they were doing is what is just wild and just outrageous. Like, saying that your child plays a sport that they've never played before and photoshopping your child's head on the body of another athlete is insane. I mean, I'm sure someone's working on the film for that right now. It's crazy. It's just crazy. Some of the healthcare fraud cases where you have pharmacists who are diluting medication for cancer patients to have a higher margin, like that's just awful. So yeah, there's some really rich stories, because we know numbers tell stories. So there's some really rich ones.
So the numbers that come out of these films, Diane Catani, $500,000 in a pretty short span of time. Rita Crundwell, $54 million. What can those reminders kind of teach organizations to learn from those cases?
Well, one of the things that I was reading a really great book by a CPA, CFE, by the name of Tiffany Couch. And the name of her book is A Thief in Your Company. And my students are reading it right now. It's a great book. And one of the things that she says in this book that I think is so powerful is a trust violation doesn't have a number to it. So whether it's $50,000 or $50 million, the violated trust is still the same for that victim. So I think the lesson is not to get fixated too much on the number, because in the Red Flag Mania game that we've created, the issue in that organization is a small number. But it's the trust violation that's so painful, and you feel it. So I think the lesson is let's not focus on the amount, but let's focus on the internal control weakness and making sure that we don't have a violated trust situation.
Kelly, anything to add in closing?
No. Go watch All the Queen's Horses. Go look at www.redflagmania.com and learn about that experience. It's pretty cool. It's a different way to use film. It's a way to experience a film as opposed to watch a film. So I think it's pretty cool. Well, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thank you. It was great.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.